You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Listen, little lady, I don't know if you know this, but this is our 200th anniversary Talking While Married show.
Well, congratulations to us.
And you know, Linda, I can think of no better way to kick off this show than to speak with a person who has become a dear friend, and that's a candidate for the position of Chief Justice for the 4th Court of Appeals out of San Antonio in the state of Texas, and that's Judge Renee Yonta. So, Renee, you got your cup of coffee in front of you, so I thought we'd have a great conversation this evening.
Well, good evening to y'all, and congratulations. There's a lot of folks that look for those anniversaries. I've never known anybody to have a 200th anniversary.
We're kind of old there, Judge.
A little bit long.
I don't know.
A little bit long in the tooth, Judge. So listen, Judge, this is such an important election. You know, everybody says every 4 years, this is the most important election in our lifetime. But I think you would agree with us that this is definitely federally and statewide, this is probably the most important election of our lifetime.
Okay. I do. I think this is one of the most important elections. You know, those of us who have to run for office will often say that this is the most important election. And so it's not, I've seen and heard that refrain for many years, but there's no question. This one is, we are in the crosshairs. Our country and our belief structure and our way of life is in the crosshairs. So this truly is the most important election that I've ever seen in my life.
Well, you know, Judge, people really, unless they've been in a courtroom, like I spend a lot of time in federal and state court, they have such a limited knowledge of the judicial system and what judges do. I thought this would be a wonderful opportunity for you to introduce our listeners and followers to that system and what judges do. And I think no better way to do that than just talk about the position of Chief Justice in the 4th Court of Appeals. And that's the position that you're running for. Tell us a little bit about your background and what a regular justice does, and then what the Chief Justice does.
Well, those are great questions. And every state has a different structure for their judicial system. But pretty much throughout the United States, even though the structures might vary, they're very, very similar. You'll have lower courts in Texas. That's the justice courts. It's like the justice of the peace and your municipal court. Your second layer is county courts. They have a little bit more complex cases. Then the next layer up is district court. Those are significantly more complex cases. District courts in Texas are the busiest courts. That's where almost everything happens in the district court. And then we have a layer of what's called intermediate courts of appeals. And the intermediate courts of appeals basically grade the papers of the judges in the county court and the district court to make sure that those judges really follow the law, that they apply the rules of evidence correctly, that they apply the rules of civil procedure and criminal procedure correctly. And that is where the 4th Court is, the court that I am running for. The 4th Court is one of 14 appellate courts in the state of Texas. Texas divides itself into 14 districts. The 4th Court is an area that is 32 counties. And I'll tell y'all, there's be some of y'all listening to this, maybe in Connecticut, we're bigger than you are. Geographically, the 4th Court of Appeals Judicial District is larger than Rhode Island. It's larger than New Hampshire. It is geographically diverse. It's ethnically diverse. It's economically diverse. And it is one of the most, actually one of the most important areas of Texas And that makes the fourth court an extremely important court to have really strong judges, because the job of the fourth court is to consider every appeal. That is, any case coming out of the county court, any case coming out of a district court where one of the parties thinks the judge did the wrong thing. The judge called the law incorrectly. The judge applied the law incorrectly. They file that appeal with a fourth court, and the fourth court has to, required by law, hear every single one of those appeals every single year. There's around 1,000 appeals a year that go to the fourth court. And all of those are supposed to be disposed of within that year. Most of them do. And then if somebody doesn't think the fourth court got it right, then they appeal to what's called the Texas Supreme Court for the civil side, the Court of Criminal Appeals, which is the criminal side. And those courts get to be picky. They get to go, oh, that's an interesting case. Let me take that one. Oh, you know, I'm not so interested in that area of the law. It may be wrong. Somebody might have done it wrong, but it's not important enough to us to take that case. So in those instances, when you get all the way up to the Supreme Court and the Court of Criminal Appeals, they take about 1% of the cases. So what that shows you is the last place for justice to be done is at the Fourth Court of Appeals. It's at those intermediate courts of appeals. And that's why the courts of appeals are so crazy important in the state of Texas, because it's your last chance for justice.
You know, Judge, can you tell us just briefly a couple of examples of the types of cases that your court would hear?
Yes. A really good example is a criminal case. I'll give you an example of a case that I recently was reviewing. There was a man who was serving as a substitute teacher at a private school here in San Antonio. He took lewd pictures of some of the girls that he was supposed to be teaching. The principal came in, grabbed his phone, and saw those lewd pictures and called the police. The police arrested him, and it went to trial. At trial, this man's defense counsel said, you know what? That principal was just like the police. And as such, the law requires that principal to get a search warrant before he could take the phone. Because the principal didn't do that, all of these lewd pictures need to be what's called suppressed. That is, not made evidence in the case. Well, luckily, the trial judge didn't agree with that, thankfully. But it went up on appeal on that issue to the Fourth Court of Appeals. And the Fourth Court of Appeals had a 3-judge panel. Every single appeal is decided by 3 judges. 2 of them said, no way is a principal a police officer, and decided that the trial court was correct in not suppressing those pictures, making sure the jury was able to see what bad things this man had done. However, for some crazy reason, my opponent for this position decided that the principal was in fact a police officer, was equivalent to a police officer. And she filed a dissent, not following the law, for some other reason, results oriented. And that went up to the Court of Criminal Appeals, the very top appellate court for criminal cases. And I'm going to tell you, they were quick in deciding that my opponent was wrong and the 2 other justices were right. But that illustrates to you, I hope, number one, first of all, these are the kinds of cases that come to the fourth court. Criminal cases are part of our docket. And number 2, how important it is, crucial it is to our society to make sure that we have justices on the fourth court who apply the law as it's written, rather than coming up with some results-oriented analysis. So criminal cases are one category. We also have a lot of family law cases. The district courts in Texas handle all the family law cases, divorces, modifications, unfortunately, child protection cases. Almost many of the child protection cases end up at the Court of Appeals to be reviewed to make sure that if the parents' rights were terminated, that was done according to the law. Divorce cases and grandparents' rights, a grandma or grandpa saying, hey, listen, I want to spend some time with my grandchild. Those cases also will get appealed to the Court of Appeals. And it's really important that you have justices on the fourth court that have a real deep understanding of the law on family law and how that ends up applying in the courtroom. And then the third category is big, huge civil cases. The fourth court includes an area called the Eagleford Shale Play. That's the place where a whole lot of oil and gas gets created, making the United States energy independent from the rest of the world. In fact, I think the statistic is that the Eagleford was producing more oil and gas than Saudi Arabia. That's how important this area is to our national economy. So there are always disputes about oil and gas interests. There's huge disputes between different companies that have contracted with each other and the contract went sideways. And there's a number of different kinds of personal injury, trucking, employment disputes that arise in that area. So it's really important that you have folks on the Fourth Court of Appeals that have that kind of commercial law background. So you see, it's really kind of crazy because the Fourth Court really has very a broad and varied docket, ranging from disputes over money all the way over to disputes over liberty.
Well, and we've talked about before, Judge Yonta, the difference between a constitutional judge, somebody that really abides by the law of the land, and activist judges. Can you address that a little bit and talk to us about the difference between those two?
And the big difference is one word, and that is courage. Because all lawyers should know the law. That's not to say that there aren't gray areas in the law. There absolutely are gray areas in the law. When there are gray areas in the law, you need not activist judges who are looking at something and saying, well, this is the result I want. This is how I want the law to be. Instead, you have to have dispassionate, courageous judges who will do the research and apply the law as written. So if the law is gray, then you move back and you research further and you dig further so you can see where that law came from, because it always ends up coming from some solid statute, some solid rule of law that is longstanding. That's what Justice Scalia did. So many times he would have to look back all the way to the founding fathers. People talk about Justice Scalia as like, oh, he was really into history. He was, but he was into history because when there were gray areas in the law, he would do the research and the historical analysis to go all the way back to the birth of that concept of law so that his decisions were entirely rooted on the rule of law. And that takes a lot of courage.
Well, I agree with you. We are seeing more and more activist, you know, I'll put that in quotation marks, judges and decisions in recent years. And I find that very, very frustrating. Just like you, I believe in our Constitution and I believe in the rule of law. And I think that a judge, as you say, they do have to have the courage to not just get the result that they want. And we're seeing that more and more. It's very scary to me, and it should be scary to the general public, because when you just take the case that you spoke about the school teacher,
yes,
that goes down to the level of people's homes. So the parents of those schoolgirls who were violated, that's important to them. It's important to their lives. And for somebody to take that away from them is just wrong. And, you know, when we come back from a break in a few minutes, I want to discuss with you, I believe you are just uniquely qualified for this position that you are running for. And there are some large differences between you and your opponent. And so in a few minutes, I want to go over that.
Judge, in talking about that specific case, which they tried to use the exclusionary rule with regards to whether that discovery evidence could be admitted into the court. You know, for your opponent to equate a principal to a police officer, to me is just mind-boggling, because obviously the principal's not a certified officer. He hasn't gone through the education, training, and experience that an officer does. He doesn't understand the difference in the standards of proof between reasonable suspicion and probable cause. I mean, that to me is such a far-fetched analogy and a decision. It just boggles my mind on how something like that can take place at your level of the court.
Well, the good news is there were two other judges who followed the law. So these young ladies did receive justice because this individual was in fact found guilty. I'm just very thankful that our legal system protected that verdict.
Well, I think it's important that judges try to be on the same, sheet of music with respect to, their understanding of the law and their ability to articulate that law in their various decisions and rulings. Hey, listen, how about our first cup of coffee?
What if a new treatment, backed by 17,000 scientific articles, was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist, death investigator, and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. Are you a fan of CSI shows and documentaries? Are you fascinated with how death investigators like me solve high-profile death cases like you see on the news? If so, then I encourage you to join me as I unpack some of the most high-profile police and civilian-involved death cases in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Read all about the forensic evidence you never heard on the evening news. You can get a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, today by ordering it on my forensic site at www.dronmartinelli.com. DRRONMartinelli.com. And remember, without truth, there is no justice.
Judge Yonta, you are uniquely qualified for this position as Chief Justice of the Fourth Court of Appeals in Texas. And I am a big fan of yours, and I would love for you to share with people all over the country your qualifications, because I just think that they are absolutely outstanding and amazing.
Well, I deeply appreciate your support. I really do feel like I can look back now and see that that God had really prepared me and put me in different places in my career that created skill sets and created exposure and experience and a depth of understanding that now I look at and go, oh, wow, that's really going to be a helpful piece. And that's a helpful piece. And that's a helpful piece. And then you put those pieces together and it's almost like a jigsaw puzzle. And you see that in fact, this whole professional life has been preparing me for this position so that I can lead this court in the way it should be led. I've been an appellate attorney since 1993. The very first job that I had out of law school was sitting at the feet of a man named Wendell Hall, who really was and continues to be one of the most well-renowned appellate lawyers in the United States of America. He has several publications, one of which I was very blessed to help him with, that is one of the most cited publications by appellate courts in the United States. Having the opportunity to be trained by Wendell was amazing. I had my first oral argument when I had just finished my second year at the Supreme Court, at the Texas Supreme Court. I just finished my second year as a lawyer. That's crazy. I argued at the Texas Supreme Court at least 8 times. I was on, I've been on at least 30 briefs before the Texas Supreme Court. And almost all of those cases, that the first 17 years of my career was handling legal issues for commercial and business cases. The oil and gas case, the huge contract case, the huge statutory construction case, all of those deeply providing experience in an element of cases before the Fourth Court that are so prevalent, those ones that percolate up from the Eagleford Shale, these breach of contract cases and oil and gas cases. So there was this 17 years of intense appellate work that I did that really is like a little piece of the jigsaw puzzle that just perfectly fits into that category of Chief Justice. I became board certified in appellate in 2003. Of the 7 justices on the Fourth Court, only one other of them is board certified in appellate law. You know, and this is what you do day in and day out as an appellate justice. And so having those credentials of being board certified, when only 1% of the attorneys in the state of Texas become board certified in anything.
That is an amazing stat and so important for people to understand. Yes.
So that's another kind of piece of the jigsaw puzzle that I have that really makes me well suited for the Chief Justice position. After 17 years of doing this intense appellate work day in, day out, and I mean day in, day out, I worked Monday through Sunday.
Oh, boy, we know that feeling.
Whoa. I took the bench. I was appointed in 2009, and I took the district court bench in 2010. I was appointed by the governor, Rick Perry, at the time. And I really spent the next 7 years. I had a little 2 years where I was off the bench, and then I went back on. That whole almost 10-year period was serving as a district court judge. And that time period was crucially important because 70% of my work was now family law and child protection cases. And so day in and day out, I handled divorces, modifications, child support, and those cases where the state has to step in and protect children and hopefully restore families. I became intimately involved in understanding our foster care system and the challenges that our foster care system has. I learned that teen girls in foster care are the most compromised group of children in our entire state. 90% of that population becomes pregnant before they're 19 years old.
What is the percent?
90%.
Oh my gosh.
70%. Incredible. Yeah, it's incredible. 70% do not graduate from high school. So you can see the challenge that is there. And so I became an expert in family law, and I became an expert in protection law. And the other thing that I did is I researched the law because that was my deal. That I'm a researcher. I'm a law nerd. And I thought there's got to be more that judges should be able to do to help, especially children in foster care. And I did, in fact, find a statute that charges district court judges. That's what I was, a district court judge, charges me with that obligation to oversee the care and placement of children in foster care. There is no law stronger than that on the books of the state of Texas. And so I took that law, applied that law, and created a special program, which we call Pearls Court. And I had between 20 and 30 girls assigned to my court every year. And I did this at night and on the weekends and during my lunch hour. So I held the rest of my docket and then put a special docket together. And we provided, I brought in mental health professionals. I brought in women from all over San Antonio and Bexar County to mentor the girls. We brought in hands-on subject matter experts to teach the girls how to cook, how to fill out an employment application, how to have a good handshake, how to change a tire. All of these things we did hands-on. Not, okay, let me show you how to do it. No, we all, with all of us women, up to 60 women every other week came to the courthouse. 30 girls came to the courthouse, and together the adults received training on how to help girls that had been traumatized. So the adults got training. The girls had therapy, very strong girl-focused therapy to heal from the pain that they've experienced in their lives. Then there was a bonding experience, you know, where the girls and the adults would get together and develop really strong relationship. And then we would have an interactive program where they learned a life skill. That program was so successful that in the years that I was the judge of Pearls Court, not a single one of our girls got pregnant.
Wow.
You know, that I'm loving this conversation and your explanation of this, because, you know, I was just telling Linda, when I was back in the day when I was in law enforcement, and I came from a teaching background before I was even in, became a law enforcement officer. I worked with high-risk youth at a local high school twice a day, teaching survival skills to primarily young men and women that were gang members, and trying to, you know, break that cycle and give them the same survival skills you're talking about. What I find amazing about your discussion, Judge, is that is happening in your court, which I would never, and I don't think the public would ever expect that level of hands-on work and that community give back. So, boy, just listening to you talk about that, just there's a lot of pride that swells in me, you know, towards you. And just thank you so much for that additional service to your community.
Well, and I totally agree, because in my time in law enforcement, I worked in juvenile. I worked a lot with women, the kind of women that you are talking about right now. And I absolutely can picture everything that you're saying with these women who, girls who did get pregnant, who really were under the thumb many times of very bad people in one way or another. So to give them that mentoring, I think Ron and I have both kind of been there, certainly not to the level that you have taken it upon yourself. I have a question. Is that Pearls Court, since you are no longer in that particular position, does it still exist? Did somebody keep it going after you founded it?
Yes. And I have to say, that is what one of the things I'm most proud about Pearls Court is that it was not just a flash in the pan. Pearls Court continues. There are two judges in Bexar County that now oversee Pearls Court. And a third judge has become involved, a male judge. And we have now started a boys program called Eagles Court. Same concept, this triad of number one, really good therapy, number two, really strong mentoring, number three, really hands-on life skill training. And that model is now being transferred over to the boys, continues to be absolutely vital and very blessed. after leaving the court, I have been blessed to be able to move over to the nonprofit side for the girls. We started a foundation, a 501c3. We built Pearls Foundation. We have had to create its initial budget, its infrastructure, its policies, its procedures. And all of those skill sets were skill sets I'd had before while I was a practicing lawyer. As the president of multiple nonprofits within my community, as a leader in my law firms, and also as the first woman president of a national legal organization called US Law that had an over $1 million budget, I had developed this very strong business competency. Well, that's really important for a chief justice, because the chief justice is not just the person who decides appellate cases. The chief justice is like the CEO of the fourth court. So that's the third piece of the puzzle that I look back and go, oh my gosh, I'm so prepared for this piece of being chief justice, which is serving as the CEO of the court, handling budgeting, handling administrative procedures, establishing and refining internal operating procedures, helping with employment decisions. All of those skill sets that I had as a lawyer, I was able to revitalize, grow deeper through my role as president and founder of Pearls Foundation. And now I believe God has just made me uniquely qualified for this position of Chief Justice.
You know, Judge, how many people, okay, so we already know how many justices there are on the fourth court, but with law clerks and, you know, you were talking about logistics and personnel, how big is that body personnel-wise that the chief justice would preside over? I love your analogy as CEO. How many people are there?
There ranges up to 40 folks, including the court, its briefing attorneys, its staff attorneys, and then the clerk of court and all of our deputy clerks that work on the court. Plus, we hire an accountant, we hire IT services. So it is a small, it's not even a small business, it's a medium-sized business. It's one of the largest law firms in San Antonio, in fact, if you think of it in that direction.
And what do you think your budget is right now for the fourth court on a yearly basis?
Yeah, that is a really good question. Budgeting is quite in flux right now because of COVID, but the budget is well over $1 million a year.
Okay.
And we have, in the past, had budgeting issues, and this is so crucially important. We have had leaders on the court that have been able to walk across the aisle, you know, work with Democrats and Republicans together to come up with creative means for funding. That kind of collegial leadership style is absolutely crucial at the fourth court. And maybe that's the fourth piece of the jigsaw puzzle. My reputation, my heart is about leading through team, leading through consensus, leading by agreement, and leading through inspiration rather than by authority.
That's a wonderful discussion about how that court works. I did not know it was as big as that. Hey, listen, Judge, are you able to stay with us for one more section of our program while we take our last coffee break?
I sure can.
That sounds fantastic.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the Vision of the Voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
Well, now that we're all coffeeed up, Judge, I want to ask you about something that's dear to my heart. Ron and I have been talking about this relentlessly on Talking While Married, which is people must vote the down ballot. And we've talked about what that is. And for people who may not know, the down ballot is everything below the president and the vice president, all those big national elections. It's your local, it's your state, it's the people that you really deal with every day in your everyday lives. Talk to me a little bit about that down ballot, Judge, because I think it's just so important that we don't vote for somebody's name that we like, that we vote for somebody that we've really researched and we know who we're voting for and why we're voting for that person.
Right, right. Great points. In the state of Texas, we used to, in fact, this is the first year we won't have the ability to do straight ticket voting by a single button. We used to be able to say, I want all Democrat, or I want all Republican, and just press a button. Well, this is the first year that you can't do that. And it's important that this change happen, because what we saw is there would be swings where in a year that was highly Democratic, there'd be a lot more Democratic straight ticket voting. And then all these good judges would just be swept off the bench, replaced by people who, shall we say, did not have anywhere near the same qualifications. That happened in 2016, that happened in 2018. It basically happened, you know, quite often in presidential years. But even in 18, that happened, and there's a lot of talk about why. But the key thing was we lost so many strong, hardworking, deeply prepared and knowledgeable judges in the state of Texas because of the straight ticket vote. A good example is what's happened to the Fourth Court. Years ago, this was considered one of the very best appellate courts in the state of Texas. There were six Republicans and one Democrat. Now, with all the sweeps that have happened because of the one-button straight ticket voting, the Fourth Court of Appeals now has one and only one Republican, and that's the position I'm running for, and six Democrats. So that switch has happened simply because of the straight ticket sweep. So now the state of Texas changed that, and you can no longer have a single button that you push. You have to do every single race. And that is going to be a pain.
but a good pain in a way, right? Because otherwise we are going to be swept. And I, just as an aside, didn't I see that California just had a court case about exactly this? And did they not vote the opposite way, that you can have the sweep?
Good question. And you're really thinking about a Texas case. In fact, a federal judge who was appointed by Obama ruled last week that our straight ticket, our statute that ended straight ticket was to be set aside. And straight ticket would be back. One button is back. Well, it took the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals until Tuesday to rule and say, nope, that's wrong. And the good news is we're back to where the legislature intended us to be, following the law as written. Unfortunately, we had a federal judge here who, you know, might have been a little results oriented. I think it would be improper for me to issue in my opinion about that particular ruling. I'm just simply saying the ruling is different from what the legislature enacted, and the Fifth Circuit has reestablished the legislature's intent.
So I think that's great. Very important.
But it does make the voting process more laborious. It's going to take more time. Instead of pressing one button and being able to leave, we are going to have to go down every single screen. In Bexar County, I am the 15th screen. The president is screen number one. I'm screen number 15. And I can tell you, there's another 15 underneath me. But the farther down the ballot you go, the closer that person is to you. You see?
Right, exactly. Yeah, I get it. Totally what you're saying.
That is a really important thing to say, Judge, because that's what we've been trying to stress, that those people on that down ballot, and that, like you say, the further down you go, the closer they are to you. I love that.
Yeah.
And if you think about the president is very important and he makes very important decisions, but you rarely feel the effect of those opinions. That it takes a long time, or it's got to trickle down quite a bit. But the district court judge that you vote for, that's the district court judge that's going to put you in jail or not put you in jail. That's the district court judge that's going to determine whether you see your children on the first, third, and fifth weekend of the month or not at all. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Those are change of life decisions.
You know, we were just having a conversation the other night in regards to the down ballot, because that's been a real theme on Talking While Married with Linda and I, and say, look, you know, we are affected as Americans. We are affected at what happens at the federal level, but we're even more impacted at the local and community level. And, yes, you know, people should not fall asleep. Like you said, Judge, you know, you're down on the 15th slot, and there's 14 more below you. And, you know, I don't want people to fall asleep, you know, after they do their federal, you know, elections, and they, you know, we get our president, our vice president, our congressperson, our senators, you know, and then all of a sudden, when it gets down to the local stuff, just kind of fall asleep. Every single one of these candidates matter.
That's right. And it is, I totally agree that this is difficult, because where do you go to know who Renee Yonta is? Where do you go? How do you get information about Brett Busby running to stay as one of our justices on the Texas Supreme Court? Where do I get information about Stephanie Walsh, who's running for district court?
And Judge Kevin Patrick Erie.
Right.
Amazing, amazing jurist. I think there's two things to do. First of all, listen to great programming like you guys are having here today. Thank you so much for doing this, because it's so difficult for judicial candidates to get their message out. The second thing we need to do is, you know, it's harder work, but you can go to each candidate's website and evaluate them. Here's another thing. In your local community, likely your Republican party will have really good information on all the Republican candidates. If you are conservative minded, and this is what I see out there in the field, Republicans, people who say they are Republicans, people who say they are conservative minded, they are afraid to vote for someone who's listed as a Republican because they think, well, maybe that's not a true conservative. Or maybe that's, you know, how do I know they're not a Democrat in Republican clothing? Here's what I'm going to say, ladies and gentlemen. If you do not vote for the Republican, you are effectively voting for the Democrat, period. If you leave it blank, or if you don't vote Republican and vote for the Republican candidate, you are voting for a Democrat. And you can see that in San Antonio because we had that problem in 2018. Republicans did not vote down ballot in the same degree that Democrats did. And as a result, the Democrats won and we lost 26 Republican judges in 2018, all of which were remarkably qualified and worked so crazy hard. That's just not the way we should have our judiciary.
Judge, I have a quick question. On the ballot, does it list the party of the judge?
That is a great question. Yes, the ballot is going to show you Republican or Democrat. Here's the other thing to know. In regards to those races, and this is 99% of the races, that are where you have to run under a party banner. I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat, I'm an independent. In all of those cases, in all of those races, the Republican in Texas is first.
Oh, so okay. That's good to know.
Yeah. You hit the first one you see, but you can verify it because it will say Republican.
You know, Judge, it would seem to me with all the work that you do, you know, you're saying, you know, working Monday through Sunday and you're working evenings and everything like that, it must be so difficult for you and your busy schedule to come out and run for office. And then, you know, I would not think that there's a tremendous amount of money in a campaign coffer for a judicial, you know, candidate, you know, versus, you know, the millions of dollars that they're throwing into these congressional and Senate races. I would think that those are two significant challenges that any candidate for a judicial position would have to overcome.
Absolutely. Funding is a huge problem. If anybody who's listening to this would like to help me with that, I do have a website. It's Renee Yonta for Chief Justice. It's all spelled out, Renee Yonta for Chief Justice. I'd be so appreciative of people's support.
Well, Judge Yonta, I want to clarify your website so people can read about you, understand your just unique and wonderful qualifications for the position you're running for. It is www.reneeyanta, that is R-E-N-E-E-E-Y-A-N-T-A, the number 4, chiefjustice.com. Renee Yonta for chiefjustice.com.
Exactly. That number 4 reflects the Fourth Court of Appeals.
And, you know, I'm going to put in a little plug for you, Judge, because Linda and I have had such a wonderful opportunity getting to know you and listening to you speak at community functions. And I have to tell our friends and followers on Talking While Mary that you are one brilliant, articulate jurist. And I'm all for that. For God's sakes, we need to get someone into office that can have that heroic judicial courage to move our courts forward and to better our lives. So thanks so much for getting wired on coffee with us.
and we look forward to the results of your election. Just one of the most, you are absolutely deserving. We are deserving of you being in that position.
And we look forward to seeing you on the bench.
Oh, that sounds great. Thank you all so much. And maybe we'll just have a cup of coffee on that bench together.
Sounds great. Well, that was an extremely informative discussion with Judge Yonta.
Absolutely. And I think it's something that A lot of people don't really think about how the courts work, why it's important, who we vote for. And, you know, just doing a little bit of homework can get you the information you need as to if you think that jurist is going to make decisions that are constitutionally sound.
You know, being in the courts, in both the criminal and civil courts, I truly understand just how critical it is to get the right jurists in there on the bench. You know, I've been up before really good ones, and I've been up, you know, before a few bad ones. And it's so important that we get, like you said, Linda, and like Judge Yanta said, we get people that understand the Constitution, that understand the Bill of Rights, that understand the rules of, you know, search and seizure, and follow the rule of law. And that's the criminal side, but also going over onto the civil side as well, because so many lives are affected by how the judges, you know, look at cases and they rule in civil cases. I mean, just look at what Judge Yanta said. Look at her experience. Look at the broad range of experience. Everything from energy and oil, you know, to criminal matters, to domestic
family
violence.
Law,
yeah,
sure.
Absolutely. So I think that's so important. And, you know, we've spoken with Judge Kevin Urie. He's another jurist. He's on the bench. He's up for re-election. He's another brilliant jurist. And, you know, we've just got to have him re-elected to the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals.
Yes. Well, it is very important just not only to vote for jurists on the ballot, Ron, but to pay attention to the entire down ballot. And that's what we keep talking about and stressing. You know, one thing that Judge Yanta brought up, which I thought was really interesting, that we got hurt last year. The Republicans in Texas got hurt by Republicans voting for the top of the ticket and not voting the down ballot at all. And she pointed out that if you don't vote the down ballot, you are effectively giving your vote to a Democrat.
Oh, no, and I completely agree. And when we talk about these jurists, and even people lower down on the scale, you know, such as Lonnie Pope, and she's running for State Board of Education. I mean, they're way down on the ballot. I think Judge Yanta said that she was in number 15 place
in
on the
Bear
ballot.
County, sure,
and
yeah.
We don't want people to fall asleep. You know, we don't want them just to go for president, vice president, Congress, and Senate. For God's sakes, look on the ballot. And even, you know, your local county commissioners, your justices of the peace, your constables. I mean, wherever you are in the United States, you are going to have people that are running for office. And then, for God's sakes, don't forget the propositions, because the propositions are so important that affect our daily lives.
Absolutely. And it is a matter of taking some time and reading through those things before you get to the voting booth, so that you're not confused when you read the little tiny blurb that they have about what a proposition is. Very often is extremely misleading, and you think you're voting one way, but you're actually voting the opposite. Very important that you read the full text as best you can before you get to the voting booth. States like Texas, when they put a proposition out, that's the proposition. It's clearly understood.
Unlike California, that is so convoluted. But I think you've raised a really good point. People, this is one of the most precious rights we have as American citizens, and that's the right to vote. And that's why both sides fight over the right to vote in every single election. You have got to be educated. You have got to do your homework to be a good American.
And we suggest that you go to the polls and vote, and not mail in your ballot unless you absolutely have to. There's too much chance for your ballot going in the trash, or your ballot being fraudulently, you know, taken out of your hands if it doesn't happen to come to your proper address or something. Go to the polls and vote. You know your vote is going to count.
Well, Linda, why don't you tell people how they can listen to Talking While Married?
Well, on Talking While Married, we play every single night, Monday through Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on AmericaOutloud.com. And if you miss our show live, Please go to podcast. You can hear any of our shows on podcast at any time that you desire on all of the usual places, on Apple, on iHeart, Stitcher,
Spotify,
any of the podcast places. You can go to AmericaOutloud.com and download any one of those as well, and just make yourself at home and have a cup of coffee with us.
And you know, a really nice thing to do if you're traveling is download the America Out Loud app on your iPhone or your smart device and take it with you. So, you know, these days you can even plug us into your car and turn on Talking While Married. Like Linda said, we're on 8 o'clock Eastern and work your way down across the country.
Right. or any of the other great shows on America Out Loud. And take a gander at the website also, because there are many, many articles there that are written by just extremely intelligent and articulate bloggers, and I'm one of them. Now, the other thing I'd like to say on America Out Loud is a bookstore, and on that bookstore, you can purchase Dr. Ron's best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter and the War on Police. You can also go to his personal website if you'd like that book autographed, which is drronmartinelli.com, and just send in the order, and he will personalize it for you. One more thing I'd like to mention is Dr. Ron is now a fiction writer and has a new series, the Wade Justice Texas Ranger series, which is kind of thriller, mystery, lots of forensics in there, lots of action, and we are really excited about this opportunity. You can get those books anywhere, Amazon. It's also on Kindle. You can get it electronically. Barnes & Noble, Nook, Apple, any of the places you normally would buy your books, you can get those books. Next, if you'd like the books personalized, you can go to our personal site, which is Wade Justice, Justice being JUSTUS.com, and place your order there, and we will personalize those books for you and send them right out.
And we are just getting some amazing reviews. I'm so blessed. So if you like kind of a Tom Clancy detective thriller with a retired Texas Ranger, working cases nationally and internationally, it's WadeJustice.com.